This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The story of dead bodies. Also, I'm kind of thinking here in terms of importance. Correct me if I'm wrong, folks. Either of you can comment. If something really important happens, you will find it easier to seize on that memory. But if something doesn't seem quite as important at the time, you can lose some of the fine details. So maybe it is that a lot of the people whose stories kind of were flaky about Roswell didn't consider it so momentous when it happened. It all came about later because of the publicity it received.
One of the things you're talking about is called flashbulb memories. We allegedly all remember where we were if we were alive when the Kennedy assassination took place, or the Challenger exploded, or the other shuttle, Columbia, came apart. We all remember those events. There was a psychology professor at a university, and when the Challenger blew up, what he did was he had all the students in his freshman classes write down answer five questions, you know, where were you or what did you hear, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And then when they became seniors, he went back to them and he gave them the same questionnaire. And then the last question was, how accurate do you think your memories were? And he can compare the two. And 25% of them were right. I mean, they remembered it exactly. And 25% of them were way off base. And one of the girls said that she was home with her parents when it happened, and she remembered this very vividly. And he said, well, according to this, you were in class that day. You weren't home with your parents. She said, well, that's not what I remember. So she was completely off base on that. And I think that what that tells us is these flashbulb memories that we think of as being etched into our minds as the real event as it took place may not be quite that accurate. 50% of them, you know, they weren't very far off. They got a few minor details wrong, but they weren't far off. But the point simply is these flashbulb memories, these things that you were kind of mentioning there, aren't as accurate as we like to think they were. And with Roswell, we not only have that problem, we have all these people who clearly had no real connection to the event. Whatever the event was, clearly there was an event. Everybody agrees something fell. It was mentioned in the newspapers. It was a big deal internationally for a few hours, and then, of course, it went away when they came up with the balloon explanation. But a lot of the people who claim they were there were not there, so we can eliminate those. And some of the people who were there, their memories are clouded by all the discussion of it. The other thing is every time you access the memories, they are slightly altered. I used to tell the story that my Thanksgiving meal when I was in Vietnam was left in the serving line because the flight crews were scrambled. And we had to go. But I was working on a blog about my somewhat true experiences in Vietnam. And I had a letter that I'd written home. My mother kept all the letters, and I was reading through it, and I discovered that on Thanksgiving, we weren't at our base. We were actually at Tay Ninh, and we were promised they would feed us. We were on a standby mission in Tay Ninh, which is, 70 miles northwest of Saigon. And they actually charged us for these crappy meals that we got. But there were times when we would be eating a meal and the flight crews would be scrambled. So, yeah, we sometimes had that happen. And I did leave meals on the table and did leave meals on the serving line as the flight crews were scrambled. But it didn't happen on Thanksgiving. So that's kind of one of these confabulated memories, I guess you would call. It wasn't completely inaccurate. It was just it didn't happen on Thanksgiving. And that's the way things are. I was able to – I still can't tell you what happened in Tay Ninh or why we were there or anything about it. But I have the letter that I wrote home, so I know what happened right after it happened. So that kind of answers the question. We have to be very careful when we're looking at that, and that's why we want to fall back on documentation when we can.
You know, when it comes to the Kennedy assassination, for example, one of those pinpoints, I do remember something that doesn't seem to have varied, and that is I was home from school that day. I rode my bike to the post office. I had a post office box, picked up the mail, and everybody looked kind of glum. I wasn't watching TV or listening to the radio, so I came back home, and I think I was working out or something like that. And my father comes home and says, "Would you turn on the TV?" And I said, "Why?" I'm not quoting this exactly. He said, "The president has been shot." That's what I remember. Whether true or not, I stand by it.
Well, I was in, a math class in what's now called middle school, and the principal came over the public address system in the school, the PA system, and said, "I don't want anybody cheering, but the president has been shot in Dallas." And we always thought that was a pretty crass thing to say. I suppose if it had been Trump, there would have been all kinds of cheering in various sections, but this was John Kennedy.
Even if Trump were killed, I don't think it's fair, no matter what you think of the guy.
Oh, granted,
to act that way.
Granted the premise. My only point was, had it been Trump, that would have been a whole different situation, the reaction of the public, a part of the public. With Kennedy, he was much more universally accepted, and so that when he was assassinated, it was a great shock. And I remember some of the other things around that assassination, you know, but that's a whole other story and has little to do with UFOs. But I guess it does sort of, if you were able to look back, if you'd written a diary entry or something like that, some documentation about what happened, how you felt, and all of that sort of thing, then you could compare those memories with what you had written down. And that was kind of the thing I was talking about with the Vietnam experiences. You know, I've got something like a diary of that, and I've put some of the stories up on a blog called VietnamZero.blogspot because it relates to some action adventure books that I had written with Bob Cornett in the 1980s about Vietnam. But, you know, that's absolutely right. You've got to take a look at it, and you've got to try to compare it with what documentation you have and compare it with other people's stories and see how all that tracks together. And by doing that, you can sometimes eliminate people's stories from the narrative, whatever that narrative happens to be.
Right. But when you look at all this and all the downsides and all the publicity, and this will be the devil's advocate question, how the heck can we ever get to the bottom of Roswell? There's just too much contradiction and too many falsified stories.
Well, I did a book cleverly called Understanding Roswell. It just came out not that long ago, and I tried to do that thing by providing all the evidence available on this, you know, looking at it in depth, getting into some of the minutiae for the people that really want that sort of thing, and comparing the stories and saying, you know, this one doesn't track with everything else, and this one does, and this is how it all fits together. When you want the absolute positive evidence, if it was an alien spacecraft that fell, and I lean in that direction, I have to admit it, although I'm a little bit worried about the lack of documentation and that sort of thing. But when you look at all of that sort of thing, then you can begin to figure out what is accurate and what is not. It's the way we eliminated Glenn Dennis from the mortician story when we got to talking about that sort of thing, that the Glenn Dennis is apparently making up that, and his missing nurse story fell apart when we couldn't. He made up a name, just said there were like we couldn't check that out. There was military records. I think Vic Golubic managed to get a roster of every woman who'd served in the United States Army as a nurse up through 1947. It's like 125,000 names on this document he got, and the name the nurse Glenn Dennis gave has never surfaced. And Glenn Dennis said, well, she was killed in a plane crash with five other nurses in Europe. And we could find no documentation to support that. I went through the New York Times. The New York Times, back in the olden days when we didn't have the internet, published an index of all the stories. So you could go to the 1947 index. You could look up aircraft accidents, and it was broken down by military and civilian and all of this sort of thing, and you could check. And I went from 1947 through 1952, and there was no accident like that. Don Berliner went through the Stars and Stripes, and that's a newspaper published overseas for the military. When I was in Iraq, I always looked forward to getting a hold of the Stars and Stripes because they carried Calvin and Hobbes in it, which is a great comic strip.
Before we get on, We have Gene and Kevin and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief watching the world lose its mind. As we all know, global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits are in stock and ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats standing in government food lines. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
You see, way back when, the New York Times was the newspaper of record. You can't do that now because of space considerations and the fact that they have less personnel because newspapers don't do as well as they used to. Go on, please, Kevin.
The Stars and Stripes Berliner went through the Stars and Stripes, and he could find out nothing like that. In today's environment, we'd find it on the Internet. We'd type in aircraft crashes, and we could go to the Internet. There's all kinds of agencies. If there's an aircraft accident, especially if there's fatalities, it's going to be recorded by somebody. The FAA, the board that investigates plane crashes, whether it's in this country, there's similar boards throughout the world. You can find documentation one way or another. I can't tell you the number of things I found on the Internet that have been important to understanding ufology. You type the right question into the Internet, and you can get to information about it. So, you know, back in that era, the newspapers were the place you would go, and their files provide us with very good information. But the Glenn Dennis story unraveled at that point because we couldn't find the nurse or any evidence of the story that he told us. And then when we, and I shouldn't say we, Vic asked Glenn Dennis about it. He said, well, I lied to you guys. You said you wanted a name, and I told you at the time I'd give you a name, but it wouldn't be the right name. Dennis never said any such thing to me. I had called him one day about some other issue, and he wanted to know, when are you going to find my nurse? And I said, well, you know, we found four Naomi Selfs, and they're not the right people. I said, we were looking for a guy named Slusher, Robert Slusher. And I said, I just talked to a guy today named Robert Slusher, but he was the wrong guy. And Dennis said, oh, I know Bob Slusher lives over in Las Cruces. And so I called that guy, and it turned out to be the right guy. It's kind of an interesting coincidence getting to the right Bob Slusher, who was a crewman in 1947 at Roswell. The point being, however, that Glenn Dennis changed the story radically. Well, I didn't give you the right name. Well, you just set us back to zero on our investigation. And other things he said to track with the time frame. I had mentioned Frank Kaufman. Kaufman talked about bodies because you were talking about that and how his involvement was. And when we finally got to his military records, we had his records. He gave us copies of his records. Turned out he forged them. And when we got the actual documents from St. Louis, they didn't match. He didn't have a background in intelligence. He hadn't been a master sergeant. He hadn't done this. He hadn't done that. We found out he'd been basically a clerk or an administrative NCO, and he'd risen to the rank of staff sergeant. He'd been in the Army for what? The duration of World War II, for example. And he got out, and he ended up working at the Roswell Army Airfield as a civilian. What tripped us up is in the yearbook that Walter Haupt produced for 1947, there's a picture of Kaufman getting a medal from Payne Jennings, I think it was, who was one of the senior officers at Roswell. I was worried because it looked like it's a black and white picture, and it looks like it's the World War II Victory Medal, which is pretty much everybody who served in the military at the time got that medal, so I don't know why there'd be a big presentation for it. But be that as it may, it put Kaufman in the military organization at the time, although he was in civilian clothes when he received the medal. So we have to look at all of that kind of thing and see what we can do to document it and see if the people are telling the stories, if their military career is what they claimed it to be or their background is what they claimed it to be, and if it's not, then we can pretty much eliminate their stories and the information. A lot of the Roswell witnesses I now think should be footnotes to the story. You've got to mention them because they've gotten in the way, but their stories really should be footnotes. I think of Gerald Anderson as a footnote to the Roswell story, claimed as a five-year-old kid. He'd been on the plains of San Augustine and seen the crashed flying saucer and the alien bodies. Apparently untrue. Said he'd been a Navy SEAL, no record of that at all. And came to the attention of the Navy SEALs, and they were less than pleased with that. So you have to take a look at all of that sort of thing and then sort through it to determine what is authentic and compare it to everything else that you can find, either eliminate the story or corroborate it.
Once again, though, it's always fascinating to me, these people who are just, you know, just come out and just out and out lie about their experiences. And I always wonder, are they just, you know, wanting to try to grab that piece of history, not thinking that anybody's going to really look deep into their background or what? Especially those who, you know, claim to have a military career that can very easily be tracked down.
I think that in the past, a lot of the people who claimed these military careers didn't realize the resources available. I think of Robert Willingham, who claimed to crash in Del Rio, Texas in 1948 originally, and then it was 1950 and eventually became 1954. And he claimed that he'd been an Air Force fighter pilot. and presented documentation. I got to looking into his background and discovered that he'd been in the military for 13 months from December of 1945 through January of 1947, 13 months. Was technically a veteran of World War II, even though the shooting had stopped in September of 1945. The war wasn't declared officially over until the middle of 1946, so technically he was a veteran of World War II. Claimed that he had been injured in Korea. No record of that could be found. Said that he and a friend had been sent to Korea, not as pilots, but as, I think he said, radar technicians or something like that. And they found a couple of P-51s that weren't being used, so they'd go up on their own missions. And I'm thinking, A, how did you rearm them? And B, how did you refuel them? And C, how did you check into the forward air controller? All things that you would have had to do and had to know how to do if you were actually who you said he was. And just kind of, I think, plugged himself into the UFO field. The original story he told, I found in the MUFON Journal for March of 1960. I think it's on page 3, and it's one paragraph. And it says he was a Civil Air Patrol, a lieutenant colonel. Civil Air Patrol being an official auxiliary of the Air Force, and they do a wonderful job. They're engaged in search and rescue. They take an awful lot of search and rescue missions off the back of the Air Force. They wear modified Air Force uniforms. It says CAP instead of US and that sort of thing on the collar points. And later on, the story that he told in the 1968 MUFON Journal changed significantly. I checked with various government agencies and got his documentation and found out that he wasn't who he claimed to be. I talked to a number of Air Force pilots because Willingham had said that he'd been badly injured, wounded in Korea, and they wouldn't let him fly fighters anymore, so he joined the Air Force Reserve. And I talked to friends about that who were actual fighter pilots in the Air Force, and they said, no, that's not true. The problem is the ejection from the fighters. If you're badly injured, that complicates it, and so you were disqualified from flying the fighters. But you might be able to fly transport planes and some of the bombers and that sort of thing that didn't have ejection systems in them. So that part of his story fell apart as well. But it's just part of it's too for the fame, part of it's to get attention. Part of it is the 15 minutes in the spotlight, I think. I'm not sure that there's people who make up the stories for the purposes of making money and get on the lecture circus and tell these ridiculous stories, and people buy them. And I can't understand why people would listen to these cockamamie stories, but they're just excited about them. And you know, I think of the contactees back in the 1950s talking about their trips to Venus. You know?
Let's do our break here, and we'll continue about the guy from Venus. We've got more to come with Kevin Randall, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz. You're in
the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
I'm Tony Maruso reporting. Authorities on Friday said that they have arrested three suspects in the slaying of two people and the shooting of a police officer after a day-long search on a tribal reservation in northeastern Washington. The Colville Tribe's emergency services said on Facebook Friday that the third suspect was arrested in Elmer City, one of several small communities on the rural reservation. Two others were arrested earlier in the day. They were identified as Curry Pinkham and Zachary Holt. They did not release the name of the third man who was arrested. Despite frequent mass shootings, Congress has proven unable to pass substantial gun violence legislation, in part because of resistance from Republicans. But a bipartisan proposal by Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal is gaining momentum following a weekend mass shootings in Texas and Ohio. The still-emerging plan would create a federal grant program to encourage states to adopt red flag laws to take guns away from people believed to be a danger to themselves or others. This is USA Radio News.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Certainly the lure of the lecture circuit has to reign high until people get caught at it. Now, when it comes to faking your military record, is there no instance or no stipulation that you can't really do that?
Yeah, it's called the Stolen Valor Act. The Supreme Court determined part of it was unconstitutional because lying is protected free speech. But if you do it to gain an advantage, then it becomes an unlawful act. And I think there's a lot of people now on the Internet. Don Shipley comes to mind. He outs people who claim to be Navy SEALs. You take a look at his website or some of the things he posts to YouTube, and it's really kind of funny. He's talking to these guys who claim to be Navy SEALs, and he says, well, what class number were you in? And they can't come up with a class number because they had none. If you ask me my class in flight school, I can tell you the class number. Even 50 years later, I can remember the class number. And what's always funny is he says, well, I've got a complete list of everybody who's ever a Navy SEAL. Can you explain why your name isn't on that? That sort of thing. And it's just, so there is ramifications to claiming to be military veterans when you're not. There was a judge in Illinois, well, he claimed to have a Medal of Honor, as a matter of fact, and he got outed because he wanted to get the license plates for the Medal of Honor recipients that Illinois provided. And they wanted to check out his background, so they did it and found out that he was making the whole story up, and he had to resign his judgeship. So there's ramifications. The publisher of one of the Phoenix, Arizona newspapers, I'm not going to say which one because I can't remember exactly, but he'd show up to formal events in a full-dress Air Force officer's uniform. Turned out he never served in the military.
Right now, by the way, there's only one major Phoenix, Arizona newspaper.
Well, this was a number of years ago.
Sure.
So,
when there were more than one newspaper in a locality.
Roswell used to have two daily newspapers, for crying out loud, and there's like seven people living there at the time. I made that up. It wasn't seven people. It was more than that.
I live in a place called Chester County in Pennsylvania, one of the suburban counties, two counties to the west of Philadelphia. And you got to think, most of these towns had 5,000, 10,000 people. It supported, at the time, I have no idea what it's like now, it supported back in the 1970s, two daily newspapers.
When I lived in Cheyenne, Wyoming, we had the same deal. Two daily newspapers. And I actually was carried one of them. And when I lived in Denver, they had two daily newspapers, the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News. And I carried the Rocky Mountain News, which was the morning paper. Yeah, there was a lot of that sort of thing now. And now the newspapers are really pretty much useless. All the news, you just read the newspaper. Well, I saw it two or three days ago on the Internet.
Also, part of the problem is here is a lot of the newspapers owned by large chains, and they share material across their affiliate newspapers around the country, like Gannett owns a lot of medium-sized papers, plus USA Today. And therefore, if you get like the Arizona Republic, which is the remaining newspaper in this particular area, and you look at a newspaper owned by the same chain somewhere around the country, you'll find most of the news, except for a small number of local items, and of course the local advertising, are the same. The same, unfortunately, is true for radio broadcasting.
And a lot of it is the same for television. What I found funny is John Oliver one day was all outraged because Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns like, 100 stations around the country, had sent an editorial to all its various stations it owned to have the local anchors read the editorial. And he had a video of all them reading the same story on the air. And I'm thinking, what was the difference between that and CBS, which a lot of stations are affiliated with? With their anchor telling a story to the same audience, it's really kind of the same thing. It's here's our opinion, and we just don't happen to be CBS. We're Sinclair Broadcasting, who may own the CBS affiliate in your town, but we have our local anchors reading a story that we think is important to the rest of the country.
Yeah, but with most of the local affiliates I'm aware of, other than Sinclair, and I don't know which station, if any, in the Phoenix area is owned by them, you have the network news, or you'll have a network news report, which is carried by the local stations, but they'll say, oh, here's John Smith, NBC, CBS, Fox News, ABC, or something. They will not present it as their own.
Is that really an important consideration? Because you've got the anchor from the station saying, well, our Sinclair corporate headquarters, Gray Television is another one that owns a lot of stations around the country, by the way. I really don't see the difference between the CBS anchor telling the story and the local anchor telling the story, because it's coming from the same, basically the same place. It's the same thing throughout the country. It's the same story going around the country. So I just don't see a real big difference there, which I guess gets us kind of off track from UFOs.
Let's get back on track here. Let me just write the car, the railroad car here. Let's get back on track. Let me ask you kind of an overarching question here. Now, a few years back, you wrote a book called Roswell in the 21st Century. And I gather this is the kind of, it sounded like a wrap-up book where you look at all the evidence, go back through the sources, try to pick the wheat from the chaff, that sort of thing. So how many more books on Roswell do we need to understand this thing? To quote sort of the title of your current book, Understanding Roswell.
Because things change. We learn things. Witnesses who were solid at one point don't seem to be so good anymore. Witnesses who didn't seem to be so good actually move up in the chain of command or in the food chain, that sort of thing. And there's a lot of minutia about Roswell that is untrue, and I think we need to eliminate that from the story. For example, Glenn Dennis, he should be a footnote in the Roswell story now, because his story is untrue. You've got to mention him, because if you go to any other source looking for information on Roswell, his name's liable to come up. You've got to know who he is and where he stands. And when I did Understanding Roswell, which is the latest book, Roswell in the 21st Century was looking at it as a cold case, trying to take a dispassionate look at the evidence that existed 5 or 6 years ago and explain some of that information. Now, when we move to Understanding Roswell, I've got more information. I've looked at the officers, the senior officers at Roswell in 1947, we've heard a lot of stories about them. What happened to those guys? It turns out one of the guys blew himself up. And when I say that, I shouldn't say it quite that way. I think it was Payne Jennings, who was the commander of a squadron in Korea at the time, and they were developing a new big, huge blockbuster bomb. They were transporting it under a B-29, and they lost two of the engines, and they tried to jettison the bomb, and it detonated and blew the aircraft up. That was his fate. Another of them has been talked about having disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, and it turns out that that's really not quite true. He was on a plane with a lot of other guys from Roswell, as a matter of fact. They were moving from Roswell, New Mexico, to England for some reason. And the plane went down in the Atlantic Ocean. And the search and rescue plane found them, and they were in their life rafts and doing all of that sort of thing. And by the time they could get a ship there, everything was gone. They couldn't find them. So they did disappear, but they were like 900 miles north of the Bermuda Triangle. So they didn't disappear in the Bermuda Triangle. So that's really kind of a misnomer. So you look at all of that stuff and you try to bring the best evidence available to the discussion. And so there were things in this book, as in Understanding Roswell, as I was putting together, that I discovered that eliminate some of the explanations that have been offered and provide some additional information about what transpired in Roswell in 1947. And I think it's important to look at all of that information as a way of understanding what happened in Roswell and why it is the story developed the way it has, and that there were any number of people involved in writing about the Roswell case. And I think of Professor Moore from Socorro, who wrote about the Mogul balloons and how he manipulated the data so that he could put a Mogul flight over the Brazel Ranch on the proper date, overlooking the fact that the diary kept by the man running the project in Alamogordo, where they launched the Mogul balloons, had written in his field notes and then his personal diary that the launch for June 4th, the culprit in this story, was canceled.
We'll learn more about this and more with Kevin, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Barada. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Did you know that you could easily be saving up to 90% on your taxes by simply making a phone call? That's right. The Fortune 500, the globalists, all the big billionaires and millionaires, they know about the loopholes written into the law where most of them pay almost zero tax. In fact, many of them pay no tax. You even see it on the news. How are they able to do that? But the common person can. So whether you're a school teacher, a lawyer, a scientist, a millionaire, a billionaire, or whether you're just a regular blue-collar worker, everybody should learn about the legal, lawful loopholes. And we've got an organization and a group that I am so proud to be working with, American Tax Solutions. GCN has a special deal with them to get you the best rates. Here's the most important part. They save you money and then get part of the savings. This is an absolute win-win solution. You've got to give them a call at 855-907-4841 or GCN Tax Cut. That's GCNTaxCut.com. The only way you miss out is not making the phone call. Make it now.
Stock market have you nervous with massive fluctuations? With the impact of inflation and the upcoming midterm elections, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. But with Vantage Point, you won't have to guess. Text MONEY to 813-813 to find out how you can forecast market trend changes with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. That's right, 87.4%. Text the word MONEY to 813-813 and find the consistency and confidence you've been looking for in your trading. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. No more guessing when to get in or out of a trade. Text MONEY to 813-813. We'll send you a link to our free live training. Protect your hard-earned capital with Vantage Point.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting the word DEMO, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and text using automated technology or pre-recorded voice about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not a condition of purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text MONEY to 813-813.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
Let me ask you something here. The documentation that you looked at for Project Mogul indicates this balloon was never flown. Is it possible any of that stuff about when it was supposed to happen and perhaps didn't happen is flawed to some degree? Because it's the record that we're relying on to determine whether this is a true explanation.
There's no indication that the record is flawed. We have the field notes, we have the diary, and then the final reports that were put together as things transpired. And it's clear that flight number 4 was canceled. One of the things I discovered is when you look at many of the books about the Roswell case, they show a diagram of one of these mogul balloon arrays, and it's always flight number 2. Flight number 2 never flew in New Mexico. That flew out of Pennsylvania, and it was about 600 feet long. When they got to Roswell, they reconfigured the thing so they were about 400 feet long. In other words, they were only about two-thirds as long. But according to the diagrams, there were no Raywind targets on them until later in July. If there was no Raywind target on the balloon launched on June 4th, 1947, well, what was displayed in Rainey's office? He had a Raywind target that was torn up. He said, this is part of what was found in New Mexico. Well, we can now prove that was a lie because there were no Raywind targets associated with Mogul at that time frame. And all you have to do is look at the way the balloons were configured and look at some of the duplicity of those who are promoting the Mogul explanation and how they are looking at or trying to deceive the public by manipulating the data. But we've got the raw data. We've got the information as it was published back in 1947. And we can thank the Air Force for that, by the way. Colonel Weaver told me that when they were doing the investigation, Weaver being in charge of the 1990s investigation, they gathered all this data and they published in the book. So you go through the book and you see, well, the June 4th launch, which was supposed to leave the debris, never flew. The other thing you can put together with that is Bill Brazel's testimony. Brazel being the son of Mac Brazel, the guy who found the debris. And where the debris field was happened to be a watering station for the livestock. And that the ranch manager, the ranch foreman, which Mac Brazel was, would get into that field every other day. He would be there maybe every day, at least 4 times a week. And so you've got this balloon launched on June 4th, and he doesn't find the debris until July 6th. He was in that field every other day. He would have seen it, and the problem would have arose much sooner had it been a Mogul balloon. The other thing that you find out about the Mogul arrays is they didn't care what happened to them. There were a couple that they lost, and they said, we didn't recover them because the terrain was too rough, so we just left them out there. And then there's others where they did recover them and took them back. And there were cards on the Mogul arrays that says, if you find this, call us, and we'll give you money. And so when you look at all of that stuff, and some of it I didn't realize until I was putting together Understanding Roswell about the difference in the diagrams of the Mogul arrays, and you can take a look at those and see the differences. And I was looking, where's the Raywind target on flight number 4? And there were none. They didn't do that at that time. So it kind of eliminates the pictures in Ramey's office as being the real debris because there were no Raywind targets. Well, where did that Raywind target come from? Well, they substituted it. Clearly, they had to substitute it because it wasn't on a balloon on the Brazel Ranch. So you can take a look at all of that sort of thing and kind of understand what's going on.
So with the explanation that had been put out there that this was a Mogul balloon, and obviously it wasn't, it seems to me that there's been deliberate attempts to hide what really happened, whatever that was.
Well, I thought originally the possibility was they dropped an atomic bomb. Back in 1947, the atomic bomb, the size and shape was classified. I don't know what information you could derive from the size and shape of the atomic bomb, but even the look of it was classified. And in Roswell was the only unit capable of delivering an atomic bomb at that time. They had what they called the silver plate B-29s. They had to have a modified bomb bay for it. So I thought if they had accidentally dropped a mock-up of the atomic bomb, it wouldn't have been a real one, but a mock-up to practice with, then that would be a reason to hide exactly what had fallen in 1947. So I think that in 1995, had that been the explanation, they would have come out and says, well, we've looked at the evidence, we've looked at everything, and what we discovered is it was a mock-up of an atomic bomb that was dropped out in this field, and we went and picked it up, and we didn't want anybody to know what it looked like or what it was, because that stuff was classified in 1947, but it's unimportant in today's environment. But they didn't do that. They came up with that crappy Project Mogul explanation. And it doesn't work, and I can tell you it doesn't work based on the evidence that the Air Force published in their big, fat book about Roswell. So we can eliminate the Roswell. We have no explanation. There is no explanation. The other thing the Air Force did in their investigation was they followed some of the footsteps we had already taken and said that, well, it wasn't an airplane accident. It wasn't an experimental aircraft accident. It wasn't a rocket from White Sands. It wasn't this. It wasn't that. We already knew that. And the only thing they were left with was Project Mogul. Well, they've eliminated everything else themselves. We've eliminated Mogul. Now, what are you left with? You have nothing. And had it been something classified in 1947, I can't imagine what it would have been that they would have kept it classified in 1995, because if they had a legitimate explanation and they trotted it out, we'd all folded our tents and gone home. So, well, yeah, that's it. We're done. We're out of here.
Let me ask you, though, about classification, because obviously this is something with which you're familiar, and that is, how long will they keep things classified? Is it possible, because of the way things are, that there are things classified from the 40s and 50s that maybe shouldn't be classified but still are?
There's a great deal from World War One and earlier that is still classified, and they're still classified not because they're of any strategic importance, but nobody's gotten around to declassifying them. Top secret, you have to have a review to declassify it. That's the way the rules are. And so if you've got something sitting around in the archives or a vault that's from 1945 and it's labeled top secret, it's still top secret, even though the information is no longer useless to anybody. Secret information, for the most part, is regularly downgraded at the 3 years interval. So you got something that's a secret, 3 years later it becomes confidential, and 3 years after that it becomes for official use only, which is, you don't even have to safeguard for official use only materials. Top secret doesn't automatically downgrade. Some secret material doesn't automatically downgrade either. It has to be reviewed and then declassified. I destroyed an awful lot of classified material when I was an Air Force intelligence officer. It was part of my duty was to go through the classified material we had and see what was still important and what was not. If it was classified top secret, you had to have two officers certifying it was properly destroyed. With secret material, I could certified, destroyed, along with the NCO with me. And we took a lot of material over to the Great Lakes Naval Station to destroy because they had a thing that pulped them. The material, and that was where we had to go to destroy it. So, you know, the fact that things are destroyed is no big deal. It happens all the time. But with top secret, like I say, if it's top secret, they have to review it to declassify it, which is not to say that if somebody sends a FOIA request and it relates to top secret material, somebody will go in and say, well, this is no longer important. There's no national security issues here. There's no reason to keep this classified anymore, and they'll downgrade it and send the papers off to somebody. Sometimes it's that, well, there's some material in here that's not quite, we want to be careful of, so you get redacted material. Stan Friedman was famous for showing this document that had all this black stuff on it, so you couldn't read, you know, they like one or two words on each page. When the document was finally released to the public and it became no longer a matter of national security, we discovered that almost nothing related to UFOs, and it had to do more with a listening post set up in Turkey to spy on the Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union broke up, there was no reason for that material to be classified, and it was released into the public domain. So you have to take a look at all of that sort of thing.
Notice, folks, I have not brought up the possibility that some of this classified material could be unclassified with a mere thought. I'm not going there. I'm not going to get into the politics of this. Let me ask you kind of a general question going back to Roswell, because we're talking about the reliability of witnesses, determining that something apparently unknown crashed in 1947. So what I'm going to ask you on the next segment is, what now would they have done with it, looking at it realistically now? And if it were a spaceship, what would they have done? How would they have handled that event? And how long could that be kept secret? Because that would be such an important story that surely somebody would have come up and said, I don't care what they do to me, I'm going to die next year. I'm just going to say, this is what happened, this is the truth. Also, Kevin will be with us for the After the Paracast Premium Podcast for Paracast Plus subscribers, where he'll talk about, amongst other things, his newly updated version of his book, Project Moondust. You won't want to miss it. Check theparacast.plus for more info. We've got Kevin D. Randall, Gene Steinberg, and Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.